The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Is kind of the polar, philosophical polar opposite of Donald Trump, I think, but maybe not. We'll find out. His first film was the classic documentary Roger and Me, which was so great. Please welcome my blue collar panelist, Michael Moore.
He's terrific, I tell you. I loved what he did. Oh. If I was Roger, I wouldn't have liked it, but I enjoyed it. I hope he never does one on me, though.
Hey, I'm Paco Romaine.
And I'm George Chen.
And you're listening to SupDoc, our show about documentaries with fans and filmmakers.
On today's episode, we recap Michael Moore's latest documentary, Fahrenheit 11-9, with journalist, activist, and comedian Francesca Fiorentini. As a comic, Francesca has been at SF Sketchfest and the Comedy Festival, and appears at clubs throughout California. She was also the host and producer of Newsbroke on AJ Plus, a great political comedy series. So we're stoked to talk to Francesca about the looming influence of Michael Moore.
The trailer for Fahrenheit 11-9 looks like an epic Donald Trump takedown. He's really only in it about a quarter of the film. Actually, the documentary asks how and why Trump became president, and on the way, Moore also takes on the media, the Electoral College, and the ongoing water crisis in his hometown of Flint, Michigan. Sounds like fun, right? And in many ways it is, in that classic Michael Moore style.
Yeah, that classic style of skinning a rabbit. In this episode, we have differences of opinion and get schooled in post-colonial feminist theory, as we do on most episodes of SupDoc. And there's lots of laughs, in-depth moments, Gwen Stefani, and no real conclusions. Catch Fahrenheit 11-9 in theaters now.
Remember, rabbits, pets, or meat. And now, here's Francesca Fiorentini.
Hi, Francesca.
Hey, Paco.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
You are here with George. There's George.
Hi, there. Francesca.
Hi,
hey, Paco.
George.
Hi, guys. We're here to discuss Fahrenheit 11-9, Michael Moore's most recent documentary. Mm-hmm. We both saw it. George and I saw it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday being Saturday, the 20th.
Opening weekend. Yeah.
Second.
Yeah.
Opening weekend. You saw it on Friday.
Uh-huh.
Where'd you see
more
it?
Of a loyal fan.
Right, you are more of a loyal fan.
I saw it in the most capitalist place possible in honor of Michael Moore, which was in the Century whatever it is that's on top of the Westfield Mall in San Francisco.
Right.
That is just kind of hidden, and it ended at 1 a.m. So late. They had to show us every kind of semi-woke trailer before you could actually see the doc.
Right.
And like, hey, how about this?
That's funny.
Sundance, maybe.
Yeah.
Film about police violence. And you're like, cool, that's the one you just showed me.
Right. Steve Carell. In a world.
Exactly. But it was, you know, yeah. So opening weekend, just trying to, jack up these numbers for Mr. Moore here.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. Get it? So this doc did pretty well in its opening weekend.
You know, they're saying, I think they're just comparing it to how Fahrenheit 9/11 did, which is unfair because that apparently was the highest grossing documentary opening of all time. So
wow.
Really not comparable. And this is on like 1,700 screens made. I think the gross was like over 3 million, but I don't know what they're rating it against. It definitely opened on more screens than Where to Invade Next, which I think is totally makes sense that that's the case.
Total sleeper.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a sleeper. Did you guys see Sicko?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Great.
I did not, even though I have seen excerpts from it and I've seen scenes from it. But no, I was just looking for it to see if I could see it before we talked, but I could not find it streaming.
Yeah. But arguably, you know, this is sort of the gold mine for you guys. I mean, you guys must talk about, and you do talk about obscure documentaries, Netflix documentaries, and these are docs that are like arguably blockbusters, right? Like these are the ones where like middle America will go out and be like, yeah, I like documentaries. You know, I saw Fahrenheit 9/11 or whatever. And like, other than, you know, Planet Earth or something, right? Like, this is like the number two.
But this is the first Michael Moore we're doing. We have not done Michael Moore before. This is actually the first time we're breaking into it with you.
Oh, that's so special.
This is our first Michael Moore doc that we're recapping. But you're right. I mean, there are some blockbuster docs, and then there's the rest that are seen by like 5,000 people
right. In
their entirety. It's kind of like a gold jazz album. Like when a jazz album is platinum, it means that 5,000 people listen to it. It's the same. And those are my two favorite things, documentaries and jazz. So basically me
Ken
and
Burns,
10,000
yeah.
people can't be. What's that? And Ken
and
Burns.
Burns. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Love me some Ken Burns. I have a Ken Burns haircut, I think. Maybe not. He has more hair than I do.
Right?
Yeah,
yeah,
but the
yes,
the white brown combo,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah,
that sort of Neapolitan erudite.
yeah.
Oh, I like that
erudite. That's funny. But so, oh man, I almost feel like we should approach this in two different ways, or in a way which is like format and then message.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think?
Sure. Yeah. However you want to break it down. There's a lot of different ways to skin this cat.
Yeah, I mean, so maybe like let's just talk about the actual filmmaking of 11-9 for just a second before we get into the overall message.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, let's tear it apart first.
And
because I don't want to be part of the resistance anymore after just the way this was bungled. Like, I think I'm ready to put on a MAGA hat because my God, the holes in the story.
Yeah.
Right.
No, it was not a very coherent documentary.
No, it wasn't. Thank
nope.
you. Okay.
And that's
start
just
with that.
Real. Like
yeah.
Fahrenheit 9/11, I will just say that if you are new to Michael Moore films, clearly George has not done his homework, but Sicko is his best doc.
It is.
If not Bowling for Columbine. Like Bowling for Columbine 1 and 2 and Sicko 1 and 2. Yes,
Roger.
Yes, Paco.
I mean,
right.
Well, yeah.
I'm gonna push back a little bit. Well, maybe a lot. But
yeah,
I gotta give it to Roger and me.
I gotta give it to Roger and me. The greatest documentary of all time. Greatest Michael Moore of all time.
First time caller, long time listener. I'm gonna say Roger me, then Sicko. That's mm-hmm. just. But you're right. It is. It did seem really scattered. It seemed it was so tangential.
Yeah.
This doc, 11-9.
As is representative. It's as representative of what it feels like to wake up and look at the news at any moment, though.
Good point.
So it does.
That's a fair point. Yeah. That's a fair point.
Yeah, it just felt like a sexy remix of the news with Michael Moore's soothing witticisms above it, which I like. Mm-hmm. I do. I like his attempts at jokes. I think they work. They land. I like measuring sort of the gobble that he has grow longer and longer and sort of fuse with his frontal chest area like just year after
the waddle,
year.
Yeah.
But
he's starting to look like my aunt a little bit. He's taking
everyone's aunt.
He looks like my kindly liberal Upper Michigan aunt a little bit.
Does she wear like dirty baseball caps?
Oh my God, yes. Yeah.
Yes.
It was cool. I mean, there was a shout out to SF. In that
there
doc.
Was.
He was wearing an SF hat.
And he looked kind of hipster in it. So there was the red Niners hat, and right. then he was waying this like red plaid kind of hipstery. Like I felt like he looked more done up. I definitely, again, can we start with aesthetics and wardrobe one, then we'll go into structure,
right.
and then we'll go into like whatever it was trying to say.
Oh, yeah, some weird message.
Something about, I don't know, the president.
Don't kill people?
Yeah, some linking to fascist times.
Right.
But yeah, so I felt definitely that he was making a film about Flint, Michigan, which has about like 30 to 45 minutes of this over 2 hour long documentary. And then Trump gets elected.
Right.
And it's like, okay, now we have to talk about Trump.
Well, I feel like there's a doc in a doc in this mm-hmm. doc.
A turdockin, if you would.
It was. That's why we pay him the big bucks, folks. That's why we have him here on
support us
doc,
on Patreon. Support us on Patreon.
If we, that's very good, George. But there, it could just have
that's
been
the title.
Exactly. It should be. It could have easily just been a Flint, Michigan documentary, mm-hmm. which would have been fascinating and might have harkened back to his earlier days when he seemed like actually pissed off and actually heartfelt.
You don't think he was either in this?
I, Well, not as much as like when he made Roger and Me. Like when you watch that, it's his hometown and he's clearly pissed off about people losing their jobs and being thrown out. He even uses footage from Roger and Me in this doc.
Oh, right.
Like when that guy's evicting those dudes. It's really short, but like it's in that. So, I mean, there's, I think as you get older and as you get more money and you start rubbing elbows with the media elites, as he clearly has, you're not as pissed off anymore.
That is my favorite
scene. I completely disagree. Like, I don't think that, I think the one thing Michael Moore never fails to do is be, for lack of a better term, kind of a rabble-rousing outsider radical. Like, I don't think he's a radical necessarily, but I never feel like he's sold out. I never feel like, oh, here we go. Yes, he mentions Russia up top, but it's in this like facetious, like, yes, it was Russia. Yes, it was Clinton. And he actually really goes hard at, I thought, like the Democratic establishment and how poorly they did in 2016, which it was, and then also throws Obama under the bus in a really hard way.
Yeah, he did.
So I don't know. I didn't feel like he sold out. Like, I'm waiting for that doc where I'm like, ugh, Michael Moore, you used to be cool.
Right.
And you used to, like, stand up to the Oscars and, like, tell them the Iraq War was wrong as they chanted you down and, like, shouted you off the stage, which happened. And now you're not. But I think he actually held to his principles and values.
I do really love the scenes where it seems like he's almost trying to account for himself or take accountability for himself of, like, I had a chance to go hard on Trump in person. And because my good friend Roseanne was starting a talk show, I decided to backpedal a little bit. So he kind of does take it into account of like, hey, this is me hanging out with Jared Kushner. This is me hanging out with Kellyanne Conway. This is like me with Trump and Trump being like, oh, I hope you never make a movie about me. So he's sort of like, he's sort of acknowledging that he was rubbing elbows with these people. He goes on these cable shows as a talking head with all these other people. So I think he sort of acknowledged that that's there.
For sure. And he also talks about, I think in his book and maybe in, maybe the sort of like live Michael Moore live run that he did, I believe, in Michigan, where he was talking about the election. This is right before the election.
Yes.
Basically trying to get people to vote for Hillary. But he talks about him meeting Hillary as well. And I think the takeaway was that they were like incredibly warm people that he didn't trust at all, you know, but that she was incredibly accomplished and like she was a fan of his, that she was like, Bill, this is Michael Moore, you know, I've told you about him. And then she was like a total fangirl and he was like, I love this / I don't trust either of you. So I think that is kind of nice that he comes correct about those moments. And it was kind of sad to see him like not go hard on Trump back in the day, but who would have thought? Maybe it was like a choose your own adventure thing. Like, had he asked him some harder questions, we wouldn't have had him as president.
Yes. If he could go back and Encyclopedia Brown it, and then he would have been like, why are you such a racist asshole?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, I think 98 is when he was on the Roseanne show. So that was after the Central Park 5 ad that Trump had already put out. So he had definitely had a chance. But, you know, like when you're like... So for listeners, we are jumping around a lot. And if you haven't seen this doc,
that's appropriate for the doc.
What's
to
that?
Jump around. It's appropriate to jump around.
Yeah, well, for this doc and what we're talking about, I mean, there's so much to talk about. But what we're talking about right now is that Michael Moore shows that he was going to be on the Roseanne. Roseanne had a talk show.
A
daytime show with the tackiest set I think I've ever seen in my life. It was like weird curtains.
I just think everything had like a just like 80s filter on it. In the 80s, things had 80s filters. That's the only way my millennial brain can explain it.
Right.
But all the just like very bold colors. Roseanne. Yeah. So continue, Paco, because I feel like you're right. We need to explain.
Well, so they show him out front of the where they're going to film the Roseanne show. And the Roseanne producers approach him and say, Trump will walk if you say something negative about him on air. He's not gonna and we don't want him to walk because then Michael Moore, being a nice Midwestern fella, is like, aw shucks, well, you're darn tootin', I will, you know, do what you're asking. you know, and he's like, oh, my God, you're darn tootin'. And so he decides not to say anything to Trump. And he, and to his credit, he brings it up in the doc, which was your point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we get to see that, and it's we get to see the producers like begging him to not take Trump to task.
Meanwhile, Roseanne just comes off like a total shill, knowing what we know now, you know, like she just comes off like, yeah, just kind of a brown noser and not even that funny. I mean, because that's the thing. It's like how I would have loved to, and I would love to watch that full thing to see maybe Roseanne did make fun of like his gold bathroom or like he was corny for the 80s. Like he was corny during, you know, and tacky during like Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. He was like Robin Leach was probably like, God, Trump again. You know, he's got no taste.
Robin Leach. Nice.
Right. Like I think that. And so to not kind of poke fun at how obvious of a like a walking pinstripe Trump has always been. If for Roseanne and for a comic, like if you guys got a show and you, you know, like why would you just kiss ass with a Donald Trump like character? You know, that's there's no angle. It's not funny. There's nothing, you know. So I'd be interested to watch the whole thing.
Of the Roseanne clip.
Exactly. Yeah. It just said a lot about Roseanne. Nothing to do with Fahrenheit 11/9. But I would say that other like unlike Fahrenheit 9/11, which I felt was and still feel like is Michael Moore's most heavy-handed, kind of overblown, over-the-top. And I was a, like, raging anti-war activist who, like, did sit-ins and teach-ins and speak-outs and a lot of prepositions and other verbs together. And so, like, I was really active in New York, and I remember when it came out, and I was super excited because he was and is a hero of mine. But I was like, just a little too much, like a little, like it's a little too propaganda-y, even for my taste, but it was at least coherent. There was a very clear message about 9/11, if not being an inside job, being a complete, utter fuck up and blunder. And absolutely the US knew that Saudi Arabia was part of it and it did nothing either before or after. And it was succinct. It was coherent. There was a lot of Saudi U.S., you know, sort of like fire and brimstone-y things, which is, you know, real. But this did it lacked that, like, the overall takeaway, the grand conspiracy. For better or worse, it lacked that. And it very much was disjointed.
I agree 100%. That was, I kept sitting there being like, oh, okay. Now that that's over, we're going to get some great, yeah, we're, here it comes. I'm like, oh, fuck, okay, not yet. I kept waiting for like the hammer to drop. Matter of fact, the guy I was sitting next to said out loud, here we go at one point. And we were like, nope. He still hasn't done it. Like
he was asleep in 10 minutes. Like, yeah. Aw.
There was also on the right side of me was a guy with his daughter, and the guy must have been in his 90s, mid 90s. And he laughed out loud at all the most inappropriate stuff, which made it somehow more palatable. For me, because there was some heavy shit in the
so
doc.
Heavy.
Yeah, some I heavy had someone shit, laugh he, at a weird time too. I can't remember when it was, but just someone behind me laughed. It was like the only person in the whole theater laughing at a part. It was like, this is sad. I don't know why you're laughing, which is usually me. That's usually I'm the one doing that.
Right.
But it was like someone behind
there were
me,
laugh yeah. points, but he does yeah. a good job of I can't remember it, but like some of the ironic moments. But
Governor's
then there was
Mansion,
just a lot
a
of
one.
Like.
Governor's Mansion. Like, this is a mansion.
The Governor's
in
Mansion
Michigan,
was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. Just he unleashed a hose of dirty Flint water onto Governor Snyder's lawn, which is awesome. But yeah, there was like a minute 12 or maybe even less just about like a kind of an entire montage of how Trump probably touches his daughter.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Or touched his daughter. And it was just photo oof. After photo of a too old Ivanka sitting on Trump's lap. Which I never wanted to see.
No, nobody needs to see that. And it's, I mean, I was kind of like, I did the really thing. I was like, really? Like, I mean, of all the stuff you could go after Trump for.
But if it leads somewhere, if he got an interview with Ivanka.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or if there was.
Oh, good point.
Someone who knows a follow up, just like some kind of follow up there.
Right.
Tiffany,
yeah, for me,
even.
It was like,
I would think Tiffany is your low hanging fruit to
right.
get him to say something bad about him.
the Michael Moore like, of the Trump family.
Like, you didn't even objectify me. Come on.
Right? Yeah. It just seemed a little salacious without even needing it. And we're talking about fucking Donald Trump. There is so much you could go after him for. And this is undocumented, unproved. Like, it's just like, yeah, it's unseemly. I get it. But it just seems a little salacious. And I wanted just like, I wanted him to really fucking hammer home. But he does in a way, I think, that it was a little more subtle, and there was a circuitous route, but he gets to the point, you know, that he's trying to make in this doc, which is if you have a problem, fucking do something.
Right.
Stand up, vote, take charge, take part, do something. But like, it was kind of the way he gets there is so odd.
I like that you thought anything in this film was subtle. That's the thing that is very surprising. I did not expect that word to come up in this discussion.
Right. Yeah, I guess because I went in with such an expectation of just him doing a carpet bombing Trump and his positions and his who he is and the definition of fucking Donald J. Trump, who America's laughed at for years. But I, you know, that's kind of his point. And there is the doc within the doc thing with Flint, Michigan, which let's hover over that for a second.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if a lot of people remember or know about, you know, what Governor Snyder has done in Michigan and the water crisis that is still going on to this day in fucking Flint, Michigan. Yeah.
Break it down for us as a Michigan effort. You're the Michigan expert, so you
Michigander.
Yeah.
I am a Michigander, break a proud Michigander.
Because I learned about it all just in this doc. Like, I didn't know all the details of that. I didn't remember the name of the governor or anything. I didn't realize it came from the governor down. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And what a piece of shit he is. And he's won twice. And now, and thank God he's leaving office because he's ruined that fucking state.
Yep.
And it.
But I mean, I thought it was. There's a lot to say. It's like I'm still on the structure of the doc and thinking that.
Sorry.
If he was going. No. Listen, I'm trying to follow the rules. But if he was going to talk about. Do a doc just about the Flint water crisis. It is a perfect doc on what happens when you run a state, when you run a city like a corporation, which is essentially what Trump is trying to do as well to the country, right? And so there's clear ties into, like, if we want to make this about Trump and Michigan and Flint, like, let's do that. Otherwise, it felt like it really needed to be two separate docs. I agree with George, though. Like, I knew, very broad strokes. I haven't covered the Flint water crisis. Doesn't really lend itself to that much comedy. And it's been hard. Also don't do a lot of things on Syrian refugees, but it really was striking, the kind of like tidbits and the breaking stories that Moore got in this documentary. Things that I didn't know, like he has a woman going on record saying that she actually was asked to cook the books when taking lead levels of children in schools, and that they were apparently 3.5 is the permissible level of lead, although we also know that no lead level is permissible.
Right.
So it's just like you can function maybe with 3.5 level, whatever it is. I don't know what parts per blood. I don't know. But then all these kids had like 7, 14, 10, 9, you know, like insane levels. So that's a huge get. And that's something I didn't know. Not knowing. So anyway, I think there were just stronger ties to be made. And Snyder is, yes, a total
villain.
POS. Yeah. And a villain. And then I think that the most skillful part of the whole doc was absolutely the way he handled Obama's visit to Flint, Michigan.
Yes.
Because, you know, you have this whole doc about Trump and then you see Obama and there's part of your heart that's like, oh, thank God. You know,
here comes the Calvary.
He's going to come save the day. Yeah.
I don't know if a lot of people even know about that
story.
I didn't know about that
either. I didn't remember that happening.
Do you want to explain what it is? Yeah.
When they finally, and also it's Moore's hometown and he, you know, obviously Roger Mee is about Flint, and also he ran like the alternative newspaper in Flint in the 80s. So finally Obama comes. I think he's going to declare a federal emergency, bring in Army Corps engineers, do all this stuff. And then he's on stage and he's just like, can I get a glass of water? And he drinks, or doesn't even really drink, the water. And then everyone in there is like, hey, you know, my kid is going to be like unable to live on his own from now on. And he's like only 7. So your cute little bit about how the water is actually safe is a real fuck you to all these people that voted for you twice, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So. And there were even from the audience being like, don't drink a bottle. Like, and he's like, can I get a glass? It's like, it was so staged.
You
was-
could see him. It's almost like someone just, he rolled up and someone was like, Mr. President, this is about water. So anyway, and keep going. And so like, because you see it dawn on him like, oh, my throat's dry. Oh, I need water. Hey, that's why I'm here to talk about the water. You know what? Let me have your local down home delicious water. As if it's going to like win him points because he loves Flint and oh man, oh man. But like completely the opposite point.
Well, he wasn't.
Keep going. I'm going to check on something. Someone knocked on my window. It's very strange. So keep
going. Okay. Don't get murdered.
Deep state.
Deep state. Someone's. Oh my God! It's Governor Snyder. Yeah,
hey, I'm here to correct the record.
Fuck Governor Snyder, dude! What a piece of shit! I can't believe Michigan fell for his fucking song and dance twice. That's what kills me.
So what's the current state right now? He can't be reelected.
No, he can't be. You know what he's doing? He is making taxpayers pay for the legal. For the lawsuits that the state is taking against his administration.
Disgusting. Like, that is insane. So there are lawsuits, but how come are there not criminal charges? I think that's what something that this doc brought up in terms of the Flint part was like, this person should be criminally charged for knowingly poisoning thousands of people.
There is negligent charges. There's no criminal charges. There are charges against him. What they're going to probably at some point, hopefully, get him on is the cover-up. Not the fact that they did what they did, but the cover-up that they changed numbers and that he lied and he asked other people to lie. Mm-hmm. And one of the people that's running for in the gubernatorial race right now in the Republicans is attorney general that helped do this. Oh. So it's just continuing. But thankfully... I forget her name, the Democrat that's running for Michigan governor out of Detroit.
Yes.
She's leading now in the polls, thankfully.
The one that's featured in the film? Is that who you're talking about? Rashida?
No.
Oh, no, you're talking about someone else. Okay. There is someone.
Rashida Tlaib is running for Congress.
Congress, right, right, yeah.
Yeah. But Governor Snyder, so what they also, the other shit that's going on is not just in the state of Michigan, but one of the things that's happened in the state of Michigan as well is because of deregulation, they had a massive oil spill in the middle of the state that has now drained into the Great Lakes that just dumped millions and millions of gallons of oil into the Kalamazoo River and other river tributaries, and it was a giant cover-up as well. So that this is what they do. The fucking Republicans, these autocrats, want to take away our safeguards, give more money to the corporations so they can just poison us. You know, it's fucking bullshit.
Relatedly, another doc sort of pitch or no, promo? What am I doing right now? Advertisement? I don't know what I'm doing, but I've been paid dark money to tell you about the movie Dark Money.
Ah.
The documentary Dark Money is great, it focuses on Montana and basically Montana, excuse me, having some of the strongest...
Would you like some Flint water?
Please. Oh, God. Listen, could you? Paco, I'm not afraid of your tap.
You, baby.
It's very similar to... essentially what happened to Flint, but Montana's got some really strong laws and has, because it was the center of copper mining for this country and got completely screwed by like robber barons who like just bought the whole political system. And they show essentially how now in present day Montana and so many other states, we're back to where we were in the robber baron era, where it's like you business owners have just completely bought the government and they are allowed to. And then they poison people and then say levy, you know?
Right, yeah.
I think here's the thing. Missed opportunity for me with Michael Moore on this film, I think, was... And I see the conundrum he was in, because you cannot come out with a film in 2018 and be Michael Moore and not have it be about Trump. Mm-hmm. It's just insane. I think it would feel politically off. Like, do you not see the shit we're swirling in? Why are you not talking about sort of the broader, the fascistic rabbit hole that we're falling into right now? That being said, so much of what he does is... I think take a case study specifically about corporate greed and then broaden it out. And with Flint, he focused on a population that I don't feel like Michael Moore talks about much. He's always talking about like middle class white America, working class white America even. And this was like, poor black people.
Yeah.
And that is, and he calls it, you know, an ethnic cleansing. Yeah. And it really was mm-hmm. an attempted ethnic cleansing and completely driven by racism. And I think that for a Michael Moore film to actually zero in on that would have been more powerful, especially knowing who some of the people who go out to see these documentaries are, who might be more middle class white folks who, yes, they've seen their wages decrease. Yes, you know, unions are under attack. And yes, you know, whatever, some of them voted for Trump. But like, they're not necessarily poor. They're not necessarily living in dilapidated Flint. So I feel like there was a something to be said about like race in America and like literally how black people are still being used and treated as disposable that he didn't totally tie the bow on. And mm-hmm. you know, and I don't know. I think I would have liked to see that just that Flint film.
Yeah, I mean, even like the stuff about the army using Flint as a training ground
crazy
to like do like Walking Dead exercises and like that doesn't come in till like near the end of the film. Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. It seems like the Flint film that is inside of this film is a more compelling film than
right.
yeah. the way that he handles Trump now. And I also want to kind of bring up you know, sort of going back to the stuff about how he was like sort of, you were saying how Hillary was a fan. We find out in this film that Steve Bannon was a fan, which is actually right. not that surprising. It feels like there's a whole industry of right-wing people that are trying to Michael Moore. Like there is a bunch of documentaries that are Absolutely. Like trying to like punch holes in all his films. There's one called Fahrenheit 9/11 that I started watching. And it's like, they're not good. oh. Like they're not good films. I mean, like I'm not going to see Dinesh D'Souza's movies or anything like that because
no.
it just,
no.
but like, it does
because they're wrong. That's right. the problem.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Like,
yeah.
I every That's time I'm in a Michael Moore movie, I'm like, would I hate this if he weren't right? Yes, because I don't like being propagandized uh-huh. to, and I get people who are like, listen, don't propagandize to me. Like, mm-hmm. I get that, but I know Michael Moore is right, and I think his analysis is good, mm-hmm. which is why Steve Bannon likes him for the propaganda
yeah,
piece.
He
like
likes
all those
right
wingers
right.
wish.
Yeah.
But their movies are like, you know, Benghazi part 10.
Like,
you know, like
it'd be like
yeah. the, or loose change.
The Hitler footage and then Obama talking dubbed into the Hitler footage rather than
right,
the Trump.
Right, right.
But I also wanted to I was also thinking a little bit about Adam Curtis when I was watching this, because Adam Curtis kind of does like, you know, this mix of like found footage, not really found footage, but just like kind of like an essay type of film mm-hmm. and this felt like an essay type of film because it was the parts that I was missing and I wanted more of, and he only really did it in the Flint scenes, was the stuff that's kind of like the proto Ali G stuff, the Roger and Me stuff, where it's like, I'm gonna bring handcuffs into the governor's office, try to do a citizen's arrest, I'm gonna dump all this water on his lawn. And that stuff is where he really puts himself in his movies more than most documentary people do, and that's like part of it. It almost is like really like the Ali G school or whatever. More, it's like mm-hmm. the Michael Moore Ali G kind of like pranking, and that's like what was so good about those early films, I think. But then this one felt like this kind of like an essay. Like, you ever take a test where you got to write an essay and like a current events essay? Like, okay, well, let's just start with this, and then it spiral, and then what about this, and what about Ocasio-Cortez, and then what about West Virginia, and then what about Parkland? And like, it felt like he was just jamming stuff. And that
yeah,
that
you
stuff,
get like an 86 on that, like yeah. out of 100. Just like,
yeah, only because your teacher.
Yeah,
there,
I see. I can
yeah.
foresee just like the red felt yeah. pen right. teacher writing
and it's like,
about like well, what could have been improved.
I feel like we agree with him, so we're willing to go along with these things, but like it is right. it is sloppy in a way. Yeah,
NPR hates this film. Like, let's just be real. Uh-huh. Like,
so did the New York Times, oddly enough.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, they seem to have panned the mm-hmm. panned the movie a little bit. He goes after the NYT. He doesn't shy away from
no,
the Great Lady.
No, yeah.
I love it. That's like one of my favorite parts.
Mine too. Yeah, and I love the Thomas Friedman. Like, okay, oh God, there's so much to talk about.
Because it was chock full. It was like a quilt. It was a really, it was a quilt, because quilts are ugly as sin.
Yeah.
They don't make sense, but they're super sentimental, and individually, they're very, it's very cute, you know? And you like each little square, but right, you don't necessarily need it all together.
Yeah, but it's like your pissed off grandma made a quilt out of everything she hated about the neighborhood.
Yeah.
The, you know, yeah, like, she's just like, the trash gets picked up too early.
Like, I think to speak to that even, like, the trailer was so all over the place. I'm like, I saw the trailer, I'm like, what is it gonna be? I don't quite get what it's gonna be. And I kind of wanted, there was like a couple of like bright moments, was just like when he's talking to like Ocasio-Cortez and that guy from West Virginia. I want to say, is it Richard Ojeda, the guy who is like a vet, who is I guess a state senator in West Virginia, and like the teacher's
and
strike,
who will fight anybody,
yeah, and the teacher's strike stuff was good. And then a little bit of like, I guess like he's, I think there was like, I was looking for more of these bright moments to be like, here's some energy to put around stuff. And even those felt like weirdly undercut. Just like, here's some great people that are really excited, that are really progressive, that are running for office, and then your vote doesn't really count. Like, it was kind of this weird mix of things coming. Like you know, anything that seemed hopeful was kind of undercut. And it really, we'll wait to get to the end. We really got to like circle all this stuff to get to the end. I really am super ADD, just like this film. So I'm, was trying to jot down all my thoughts about what was happening in this film.
I kept on thinking during it, like, oh man, his editor, like they, and like anyone who works with him at this point, unless, I mean, and I don't know, maybe you guys know better, like who he works with consistently, but like, you know, does anyone tell him it's too long and it doesn't make sense? And if you like cut out all these non sequitur moments, it would just be so much more cohesive. And you're totally right. There was all these, there are bright spots right now. And the feeling I got at the end was definitely not bright. It was like, bleh. It was just like watching, you know, CNN for a day.
I do know he's working on a new TV project, and that actually seems like a better, if he could have chunked this into like a 10-part TV series, or like even, you know, I don't think he's done TV since TV Nation, as far as I know. So I'm curious what's going to come out of that. Cause I almost feel like what like John Oliver does is the old school, like TV Nation, old school Michael Moore model in a certain way, you know? So I mean, this might be a good time to segue into, you know, why Francesca is a good guest for the show, because you are someone that has done journalism and comedy, and we know you from San Francisco Comedy, but also for doing AJ Plus and doing Newsbroke. So yeah. And so we've been trying to get you on the show for a while. We were just kind of always like struggling, like, what's the thing we should do? Should we do this 10-part Oliver Stone dreary 10-part thing? Or and then this came out, like, oh, Francesca, this will be great to talk to you about this. Yeah.
Yeah, I really wanted the Vietnam War, but Paco and George wouldn't let me. They were like, you can take one episode. Have you guys finished that, by the way?
I finished it, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, wow. That's incredible.
Fucking I love how the difference with this doc is like, they spoke to Vietnamese.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Like, oh, right. They translated. Anyway, yeah, I mean,
yeah, I guess the question,
going along
yeah, yeah,
this,
yeah.
There's no question, yeah. But I'm just going to pick up where you left off and say, if Michael Moore's listening, please hire me. Would totally love to collab. Mm-hmm. I thought you could have done better. You know, I was kind of like expecting, you know,
some bosses
real...
like that. Some bosses like someone to tell them what they're doing wrong.
Exactly. You know, like, I don't hold back. I just thought you could have stuck the landing a little bit more. But I think this blend of journalism and kind of activism and even comedy are really important. I mean, you can, there are these Venn diagrams between, you know, yeah, Ali G and John Oliver and Michael Moore, because of the way that they, in some aspects, like take their critiques and their analysis into the real world. And there is some sort of like, you know, even if it's just like setting up a fake church, you know, or buying that big ass model train for whatever town it was in New Jersey that had like a crappy little train. And I think that's really powerful. I think we're in a time of oversaturated news comedy monologues that are like, great, you look nice in your suit and your desk and you're in Hollywood or New York. And it's just like, it feels disconnected still.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's nice to actually get out behind the desk and go. And you kind of, I mean, just like people liked Bernie Sanders because he's sort of the anti-politician, you look at Michael Moore and he's like so non-telegenic that there's something kind of like, fuck yeah, about that.
Well, he,
and
always he must has be been. Authentic.
And exactly. Yeah. So I think I super, I love that stuff and I hope there is more of it. And I think we need more of that stuff than before. I feel like we kind of always stop short. I feel like people are like, well, then it's not comedy anymore. Then it's not journalism. And like I said, NPR probably hates, and New York Times probably hates this film because they don't think real journalism should have an angle. You know, they don't, even if he is breaking news and blowing the cover off certain stories and actually has the balls to be like uncouth, like not following the patterns of how you're supposed to ask people questions. I'm going to just waltz right in and try and arrest you. Or I'm going to waltz right in and get a meeting, or I'm going to chase you out of wherever you're having lunch. Like, I think that is the kind of thing that like the journalistic, whatever powers that be, like, you know, a lot of folks would look at that and be like, well, that doesn't follow the AP style guide, you know?
Right, right. Yeah. Which is the problem that like the basically the fucking the DCCC has, like there's all these like A to B, like you have to follow a certain protocol and you have to say thank you and you know, you're well, you know, it's like all this, like if someone's going to take over and make people put kids in cages, and it's, there's a time when instead of saying how did this happen, it goes back to how could this happen. I think that's the message he's trying to say, is like, it happens because everyone said it couldn't happen. There's no way it could happen. You know, I think for me, that was a very strong point. Yes. It's like, you can't count on the Constitution. You can't count on Robert Mueller. You can only count at this point on you and your friends who think alike and to vote and to take a stand.
Mm.
Right? Like, to me, that was the Michael Moore message in this documentary, which I thought he did that part he did well, but it was so muddled through so much stuff that it was kind of hard to get there, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And what I, my feeling when I was watching this was like, there are people who, like my, some of my relatives who aren't necessarily Republicans and they're definitely not Democrats, but they're in between and they're going to go see this documentary because they don't like Trump, but they're not, still not sure what the fuck's going on. And I just don't feel like there was enough about our current president that for them to say like, oh, I didn't know that. Like we did with the Flint water crisis. Mm-hmm. Like,
right.
You know, that does help, but that's unfortunately now kind of in the rearview mirror and we've got to deal with this fucking dumbass. And
it's not like an impeachment film. That's the thing I was thinking. I think the marketing made it seem like this is going to make everyone want to do the 25th Amendment. And it ends up just being like, it was on the surface the whole time. He's been a racist asshole the whole time. We've known since the 70s he's a racist asshole. But it has the, you're right, like this, the what is the real message? Is it like to register to vote? Is it to like, or is it like, you know, the guy who's saying like the game's already over? It was over after 9/11. We gave up all these things after 9/11. Yeah, so what is the angle? Yeah.
I mean, I think that you guys are exactly right. It's, and the thing is, that is so overdone and predictable, and like everyone's got their book, and like the Bob Woodward book, which I still haven't read, but I, you know, it's, I mean, it's called Fear, for the love of God. And like, this was the moment, I think, to take all of those things and exactly right. Like, here's a summary. Like, you haven't followed the news because it's impossible and obnoxious and you kind of hate everyone on it? Fine. Like, let Michael Moore kind of, like, break it down for you. Some bold text against a black screen, you know, like, instability, you know, like, strong man, liar. Like, all the different things we need to talk about and sort of take stock of. And then the stunts should have and could have focused more on Trump. But again, I think it was, you could tell that he did not, like many of us, think that Trump would be our president.
No. That, boy, I forgot about the Hillary Clinton New York win room. In the under the glass ceiling stuff. Oh,
Francesca,
fuck,
didn't you cover that night? Were you covering that, like live streaming that the election night?
Yeah, I was. We were live streaming from here, from San Francisco, and so that the day before, I was like, okay, when we live stream, we need to have some kind of celebration when Trump is not president. I'm not celebrating Hillary Clinton necessarily, but at that point, I'm celebrating Hillary Clinton. Jesus, and so. What do we do? Let's hire a mariachi band. Because of everything he said about Mexican immigrants, because of everything he said, you know, in general, right?
Fucking awesome.
Let's get a fucking mariachi band. Found one. They came and we're like, yes, we're going to rock out. We're going to rush the stage. By the end of the night, the mariachi dude is like hand on my shoulder, like, ay, lo siento. And I'm like, no, I'm sorry for you. You know, I hope you have papers. Just it was so awful. Like,
what song did
then
you
I
have
realized
them to
when
do?
I saw that. So this was the thing. We were like, you know, just do your just standards. You know, the mariachi standards. There's only like 4 or 5. But we were like, well, what song are they going to do if Trump wins? Was a question we asked ourselves. I was like, I don't know, something sad, whatever. Like, not going to happen.
Creep by Radiohead. Right. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's Chris Garcia's joke, actually. Just realized.
What?
That's Chris Garcia's joke about doing a mariachi doing Creep. Yeah, it is.
Then I realized when we saw Hillary's, her watch / win room where she was going to announce victory from was covered in a glass ceiling that they were going to break.
I think it was symbolic.
It was symbolic.
Yeah. It was really glass, but it was symbolic that they were going to break through it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I feel like they were going to, because I was there when at the DNC or the Democratic, National Convention in Philadelphia when like she appeared and it was like this like crappy graphic of a glass that was being broken and then it said Hillary Clinton, then she came out. But then I realized everyone had their mariachi band that night.
No.
I mean, like, just a figurative. Yeah. You know, we all had our plan. Like, oh, man, I'm going to tell that girl or that guy that I fucking love her.
Yeah.
Know, we're going to do this. Like, you know, we had plans. Everyone had plans.
You know what God says about plans. Yeah, I completely forgot about that. And that footage was heartbreaking.
What did you do that night, Paco? What were you on the election night?
I was here in this room that Francesca and I are in. My buddy was sitting in that chair. I was in that chair. And we were just like, yes, we had food. We had pizza. We had beer. And my roommate at the time, Macau, African-American guy from Brooklyn, popped his head in at the very beginning and said, y'all crazy, Trump's gonna win, this is a racist ass country. And I was like, no, come on, you crazy, it's not, she's
so
gonna win.
It was the SNL sketch just played out in your living room.
Is there an SNL sketch
Chappelle,
Chappelle and Chris Rock, I believe, who were like,
this country's too racist to. Yes, well, that's what. And both my buddy and I were like, come on, you crazy. It's not. No, it's 85-15 right now in favor of her winning. And
we were invited to like a party with some British people. And then for some reason, we didn't go. And we actually, I think we watched some of. I just watched a bunch of different things online because I don't have a regular TV. I watched some of Francesca's coverage.
AJ+.
Yeah, I did. I watched some of Francesca's coverage.
We were
coverage.
Like, let's focus on the issues. Right. Don't go hang out with internationals, especially not from. Although the UK, they were like, they were totally rooting for Trump after the Brexit. They were like, come on, people, we can't look bad.
Yeah, you don't want to spend like politically Germans, the British, because they're just going to make you backpedal and get defensive. You're like, I don't know why we're in Vietnam. Like, you know, like that's awesome. So how long were you with AJ Plus doing News Broke?
Well, I was with AJ Plus for 5 years, did News Broke for 2 years. And left in June. The company's moving to DC and I don't want to be that close to Mordor. And, gonna try my luck in sunny Los Angeles.
There you go.
There's
politics there.
There's tons of politics.
We got Garcetti. Oh. He's going to do something. He's going to run for something for sure. Yeah.
Where is he at right now?
He's mayor
of
LA right now. Yeah. Yeah,
but what is he going to run for?
People think he's going to run for governor. Yeah, or president.
What
or
against
something.
Newsom?
Oh, well, not
in the future.
Down the road. Yeah, yeah.
He's pretty popular.
Garcetti.
Newsom became governor. I'm sounding like an idiot. Newsom just became our governor. I don't know. He's not.
The election's coming.
The election's coming up.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Got it.
By the time this comes
but he
out,
will.
Yeah, we'll see.
Do we have a Green Party candidate?
Probably. I mean, it's California. There's probably 12 candidates. I think I'm a candidate.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Vote for Pac and Romaine. And you were with them for a long time, mm-hmm. and you did all these great videos, very funny videos
News broke, you guys did.
Was that your vision? Was that, like, how did that come about? All those great viral videos you guys did.
Well, there are a few. There was sort of a pre-News Broke launch and a post, but the pre, you know, I went to the border and did, like, you know, five things to know about the U.S.-Mexico border and do we need more, and which was fun. And that got, like, 50 million views. Unfortunately, there was a huge spike after Trump got elected, which is like, if only you had watched before, right. We wouldn't be in this mess. Probably not.
Is that your fortune teller voice? Or?
Yes.
Audrey Hepburn, fortune teller, yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, and then launching News Broke, they were like, okay, Francesca, you need to make up your mind. Are you going to make jokes or are you going to just do news?
Comedians always get asked that at some point on their job.
Yes. You know, like are we going to keep this up?
No. Right.
But I think you have to, I've always said, I think, I very much am a, if you build it, they will come, you know, every morning little ghost voice whispers to me through cornfields and tells me to do some random new shit. And it's worked out for me and that's great. And even though News Broke is no longer, but yeah, it was nice to have a weekly. It was nice to be able to say, kind of like this idea of doing a Flint documentary, that we're going to cut through this week's menagerie of shit and just focus on one particular thing. So like union power and what just happened in the Janus ruling, you know, and how public sector unions are now cannot automatically inscribe their membership. They have to go out and get the membership, which is a huge blow, but also to unions, but also potentially a fire under their ass, you know. So like those kinds of things, it's nice to be able to be like, hey, this week sucks, but then like let's learn, and also joke, fart joke, animation.
Well, it's got to be watchable by a wide range of the populace, you know, and like there's kids who want to watch that stuff that are probably not going to sit through a PBS news hour or a TED talk. You know, you got to make it palatable for people. I think they're awesome. I think you guys did a great job with that. So congrats.
Thank you.
They're very funny, very informative and awesome. So
yeah, no, yeah, it was good times.
Well, did you study politics in college or like what, or journalism or no?
Neither.
No, you're giving me that no face. You're like, uh-uh.
I'm giving you a no face. I studied, my major was in post-colonial feminism. Don't laugh. It was my full major was called Ideas for Action Post-Colonial Feminism.
Berkeley? Where'd you go?
No, I went to NYU.
Oh, okay.
The overpriced piece of shit school.
I don't mean to laugh, but I'm not trying to diminish this, but
you want to know what it is?
Yeah.
Ooh, it's so intersectional. Do you know what intersectionality means?
A little bit. Not really.
No, it's a shitty, shitty genre of intellectualism that is very much in an ivory tower. No, it's actually really cool. The idea of post-colonial feminism is that there are different waves of feminism, first, second, third, etc. And post-colonial is in the third to fourth waves of feminism, so more women of color, and specifically taking leadership from countries like India, African nations who were gaining their independence in like the 60s and 70s. And
Frantz Fanon.
As what? Frantz Fanon, exactly.
Spivak.
And all these. Gayatri Spivak, the unintelligible Gayatri Spivak. And,
that's
you
all
know,
I know.
Yes,
I just know the names. That's it.
That's good, George.
Ngugi Wa Thiong'o, who wrote Moving the Center. But essentially, like, let's not approach everything from a white man's colonizer perspective. Mm. And specifically feminism in those times were like, hey, India, like, it's cool that we are free now and we're our own country and the colonizers are gone. But like, do we have to run this nation like the colonizers? Can we decentralize? Can we be more democratic? What about women's roles? So like, that's post-colonial feminism.
Got it. I got it. Is there an example of where that ideology has been effective in the political spectrum?
Yeah, I mean, yes. So like there are many inspiring leaders who now you're making me like pull up all these, but like there's something called the Green Belt Movement in in, I don't remember which region of Africa, and oh, please tell me on Twitter, but like this woman, Wangari Maathai, who I believe was a governor or some local leader, and she was all about like regenerative ecology and feminism and fucking, so like there are like strong, awesome leaders who call from, hail from these like post-colonial feminist ideas of like, we don't want imperialism, but we also don't want like to just mimic the imperialists.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, of course. That makes perfect sense. I mean, it also makes sense that that is what the unfold, what would unfold, because you still have these white dudes or just dudes in charge who are like, yeah, that sounds great, but it's going to have to follow this path.
Right.
That we came up with hundreds of years ago on the back of slaves and women. You know?
Yeah. I mean, if a great, great example of this and a really good book, if you guys haven't read Naomi Klein's Shock Doctrine. So good. And the chapter on South Africa, which is all about how when the ANC won the election and there was just so much exuberance that there wasn't a lot of attention paid to the economic changes that were that basically ANC totally swallowed and went along with, which were completely hamstrung the government. It was all about privatization, privatization, just like in a lot of second world, third world countries. And they shot themselves in the foot because of it. Right. And so again, this like, yay, you're free. Yay. Like, you know, more democracy, but you have to subscribe to the exact same economy of, you know, imperialist capitalism.
Right. Makes sense.
The definition of electoral insanity is trying to re-elect these same guys over and over again and expecting our country to be any different.
For the first time, Democrats will have an all-female statewide ticket. And on that list, Rashida Tlaib. She is poised to become the first Muslim woman in Congress.
We're not ready to give up on the party. We're just ready to take it over. And let's put some people in there that get it, because we felt the
take pain. It over.
Take it over. Mm. Take it over, Michael.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I do really love Michael Moore's documentary, Capitalism, A Love Story. That's a great one. You guys see that one?
I have not.
Actually. It is on Netflix.
Capitalism, yeah. A Love Story is really good. It's solid for like your basic like people who are like, what do you mean capitalism is bad? I don't know what that is. I think most young people and most people generally have a, like a base critique of capitalism. But everyone needs kind of like that moment where you're like, and then I realized this isn't always the best system, or like we need change. Or I don't know. I don't know how you guys feel. Maybe I'm talking to libertarians. I don't know.
Our audience, yeah, it's hard to say. But I do think, like, in a weird way, bringing up intersectionality is interesting in this film, because I think he's trying to do this thing of like, hey, how do we connect what's happening with the union movements? How do we connect what's happening with the gun rights movement? He kind of gives like a sentence or two to Me Too in the very beginning. It's not very, you know, fleshed out at all. But I almost think in a way what he's trying to do in here is to create a cross-generational connection. Like, the audience of Michael Moore movies is, like you said, like sort of this more white, middle-class, older demographic. And then I think he's even just like, there's all these scenes where it's like him hanging out with the Parkland kids and being like, what, you guys got some guy out of a race over Twitter within a day? Stuff like that. So I think he's sort of realizing all the energy that's happening with these people that are native social media people. And I think that's kind of like a form of him bridging a
gap. I still don't believe that. Like, there's part of me when I saw that, and I think a lot of the Parkland students were like, we were raised on social media and we can organize. And I'm like, wait for the other shoe to drop, you sniveling teen. Like,
you mean
it's gonna eat you alive. Run, run. Like, you know,
it started happening to them. I mean, yeah. It started happening right away to them.
Of course. They've been dragged so hard by the, like, I mean, dragged. God, they've been just, you know, threatened with their lives and everything. But it is that I felt very old when I was like, when someone says we were raised by social media, like, I feel like my heart turns to dust.
Why? Like, can you expound on that? What do you mean? Like, why does that, what is it about that
scares me?
It does.
It totally scares me.
Because of the bullying? Because of social media teaching anybody anything kind of thing?
I don't, and it's ironic because I'm like, I hate Facebook, and I'm like, I'm famous thanks to Facebook. I'm like Facebook famous. Yeah. And I hate it. And I think it's because without a non-social media kind of like education and moral compass from like life and discussion and face-to-face time, I wouldn't know how to necessarily approach a lot of things that I see online. But at the same time, I mean, as I'm saying that, I'm like, half the people who fell for like fake Facebook ads and all that were like over 50, you know what I mean? Or like they were not trained.
They're not savvy.
Right. So yeah. maybe people online, I mean, maybe young people are actually more media savvy. It's just, there is something very gross to me about, like, instead of calling someone, only communicating in emojis.
Right.
And then, like,
nothing
people have probably broken up via emoji at this point.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, of course they have. There's nothing personal about social media. And if you are raised by something that's impersonal, then who knows what the future's going to hold.
Right.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, he doesn't really get into social media too much in this documentary. I mean, part of the other part that I felt very strongly about it was the teachers union part of this doc, mm-hmm. when he goes to West Virginia and he starts talking to those teachers who are just like, fuck, they were going to take away everything that we had. They don't make much, and they had to wear basically a Fitbit, which that news to me was just, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, they had to like wear technology that if they didn't do 10,000 steps in a day for a year, they had to pay $500 or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Because they wanted healthcare.
It's really just an ankle bracelet. It's like a healthcare ankle bracelet.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a way to monitor. I mean, that's the part of like authoritative leaders and positions, is that they want to take away safeguards. They want to keep a monitor on the people that they don't want around or they don't think are going to vote for them, and then subjugate them and make their
lives. And they want to sell Fitbits. Like, it's like a corporate, it's a privatized answer, a technocrat solution to like lowering health insurance or something.
How can people not, like, I feel like in my lifetime, all the Democratic governors and presidents have kind of moved the country forward and saved us from certain recessions and deaths, and governors as well, and mayors and stuff. And we still, because Republicans are horrible at governing. And so why do we keep voting in Republicans? What is that? I throw that to you guys. That's my softball. Why? What is it about this country that we want these authoritative dickheads instead of people who are like, you know what, you guys should not have to pay for college and you should have free healthcare?
Because nobody ever puts it like that. They only focus on like the quote unquote cultural issues. I mean, you see the way the president basically admits that the NFL kneeling issue is a quote good issue for him. It works for him because it basically dog whistles to your inner racism from very uneducated or angry people who can easily blame the other. And it also dog whistles to just like your jingoistic, like, fall in line, do not speak, shut up. And I think especially at post 9/11, which is something else that this doc didn't really touch on, but it's like, it's so much easier post 9/11 to be like, fall in line.
Right.
All right. Patriotism is falling in line, shutting up and not saying anything, minding your business. Although minding your business, I actually, I believe in, but, definitely that's an American value I love. But I think post 9/11, it's been much more like conformity is virtue, and sort of, I think, allowing a greater power, whether it's a military power or a corporate power, to dictate things is, and that was happening again throughout 9/11 and before, is also seen as a virtue. And now we see that they do not have our backs, that privatizing things does not work. But again, you can just say, well, you know, life begins at conception, and then you get the vote.
Right. Yeah. That's just so, it's just so odd to me. I don't understand. And then he was making this point of like, if attack is to happen, you know, or like it's like, it just seems so imminent to me. It sucks.
Yeah,
I thought that was a really good point, though.
Yes,
it's a super important point, and I think we all need to be. It's scary as shit.
I know, because it's already kind of happened, and we had the Patriot Act after that, which was horrible and taking away so much of our freedoms. And then we hear from the Nuremberg prosecutor,
right?
That old, lovely old man. Yeah. That Benjamin Friends, I think I have written down.
What a moment.
Like, yeah, wow. There, I mean, I legit held back some tears in this.
Why that hold was, back? Oh, your theater was crowded. See, that's why I go to the 10:30.
Yeah. I had people on the right. And I can't cry in front of old men. That's just something. I have a problem with that.
I can only cry in front of old men.
Right? Well, that makes sense. Were you raised in San Francisco?
That's just some latent dad issues. What? Yeah, right. I was.
That's the difference.
I was raised in on the peninsula.
Oh. Mm.
Okay.
High school. What high school? What high school?
Menlo Atherton.
Oh.
Did we go to the same high
school? Bellarmine.
Where'd you go? Yeah.
Catholic school.
Go what? Bears.
You're wow.
All boys. So we did not compete in any sports.
Because you were all boys?
Oh, yeah. I think so. I mean, I also didn't pay attention to the sports. I think we were all boys at the time. Hey, let's also, what's one thing you learned from this doc? Can you think of one thing that you didn't know about ahead of time that you learned from watching this?
A couple of things, but I thought something we haven't mentioned yet. Michael Moore likes to start on like these, again, weird notes, but essentially back to the idea that Trump's entire presidential run was a joke and or a fake pump.
Gwen Stefani. Like, that's right.
And the Gwen Stefani thing. So right. So that he found out that Gwen Stefani was getting paid more on The Voice from NBC, I guess, than he was. And he got pissed about it and then announced his run for president. And didn't expect the turnout, paid it totally obviously paid those first like cheerleaders when he announced to hold like "We love Trump" signs
when he was riding the escalator down,
riding that escalator. They were way too into it. They were like little teeny boppers, or like not the, they were like the TRL
right
sign holders,
right,
who but, just sort of, they circle Times Square perpetually.
Well, I've also heard, though, it's because President Obama and Seth Meyers made fun of him at the White House dinner. So, I mean, it's like, is it the Gwen Stefani thing? Is it Obama? Is it his? That's the thing. It's like, I always feel like we're giving him an out by making him seem kind of cartoonish. You know, like the Gwen Stefani thing seems kind of cartoonish. The White House Correspondents' Dinner anecdote seems, it's like, I feel like he's, like, actually,
he is a walking cartoon. I mean, he's a total stereotype. He is that guy. He is that person. You know, we all know that guy. He is the guy who like tries to touch his, you know, 17-year-old cousin's butt at a wedding, like when they're slow dancing. He's the guy who, you know, draws dicks on people's foreheads when they pass out. Like, he is our id. He is the most.
I feel like he's more Machiavelli than Mr. Magoo, though. That's my.
You think he's got a plan?
Yes, I do. That's my feeling, is that he's not this clownish guy that just kind of falls into these things. These are all planned moves. That's my belief, and I feel like if we keep like painting him in a clownish way, it gives him like exits.
I felt that way about Bush for sure, and I think people treated Bush like he was an idiot. But I think similarly, you know. The fucking scumbags that are surrounding Trump know exactly what they're doing. I mean, the Stephen Millers who are like, tweet about the NFL again, or you should tweet about, you know, this Christine Blasey Ford who's accusing Judge Kavanaugh of, you know, assault. Tweet about it. Yeah, you should. You know, he's being egged on, and it's absolutely a strategy. It's definitely more evil. meaning we're not starting wars. At least we are continuing wars. I think it's wrong to say that we're not actually engaged in more militarism, because we are. But you're, I don't know. I think he's cartoonish. He's just that guy. He's that fucking guy.
Yeah. And for me, George, it was the Jared Kushner having a premiere for Sicko.
Amazing.
Which I don't remember.
That was a big takeaway for me too. That was you took my answer. That was going to be my answer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
I'm sorry, buddy.
I mean, there's a lot I didn't
know. With his little dimples. He was so,
he's so cute.
Happy to hold this premiere for Michael
Moore.
He loved
socialized medicine then. Yeah.
Yeah. He loved it then. Yeah, that's just, I think the Trumps were all Democrats at one point, probably.
Well, since you took my answer, Paco, I'm going to have to say I didn't know about the redneck thing actually came from being pro-union.
Right. Great one.
And that was a great, yes. And when that's kind of what I was thinking about, like, maybe I'm not using intersectional in the term the way that you're using it, but like, he's, I think, trying to build, there's like alliances to be formed with all these different sections. He's like, another thing was, he's just like, here's all these polls that says America is liberal. It is 61% liberal, you know, or like 70% people want free education. They want all these things according to these polls. Yeah. So he's like, people just aren't voting. That's the other part of it. So,
or we vote against our wants, our deep desires. Our Americans have been trained to vote against their own welfare, their own well-being. That's the great lie that happens in this country so much, which is why I was ranting about, why are we voting for Republicans in the first place? Because they're horrible at governing. Yeah. They're horrible.
I mean, they don't want it. They don't want government. That's like the whole thing.
It's
true.
That's exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. They actually, it's like going inside of a bounce castle and like deflating it while you're in there. Right. That's what this government
wearing
is doing.
Wearing spike shoes in a castle that looks like the White House or the Capitol building. Did you guys watch the Beto O'Rourke Cruz debate?
I did not watch it.
I sadly did not, but I heard about it. What did you think? You see it?
I watched the entire thing. I'm fascinated by it. I love politics, so, and I hate Ted Cruz and his no chin fucking bullshit. And I've been interested in hearing how Beto speaks, because I've only read his stuff. I've never heard.
There's a great video of him online of him answering a question about basically like the Kaepernick stuff, and he has a great answer, and it's like on Facebook. You can find that video. Yeah,
there's a couple of them going viral right now, and they're both specifically about Black Americans in Texas. One of them is in a church, and another one, it's like he's asked like what he's gonna do for African American women.
Oh, okay, I didn't see that one.
And he just like has this breathless takedown of like our healthcare system and how like women of color are at the most risk for dying of like the most preventable diseases, and then goes into the prison, the school to prison pipeline, and it's just like, excuse me, like he's amazing. Yeah. You're a Texan, and he doesn't hold back. He doesn't, and he says like, and that is why women need control over their own bodies. Da da da. So it's like you think he might, you know, pull back, but he doesn't.
He goes hard,
and. Yeah, I heard he was very measured in the debate.
He was very, very measured. And that's what gives me pause, because that's what happens is these Republicans will push progressive and liberals into a corner so that you can't really box out. Because if you're seen as flailing too much, then they're just like, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's some crazy progressive that is from Mars, you know?
But clearly he does. So, for me, I get annoyed at that, because I also think Hillary could have just, you know, given Trump the 1-2 punch, and rather than doing that, she was like trying to speak to invisible America of, you know,
it's a good politician
go
voice.
To my website, you know. And it was like, and he's like, no, tell him he's wrong,
tell
just
him he's an asshole,
tell him
face.
He's an idiot. Like, even people who are gonna vote for Ted Cruz hate fucking Ted Cruz. Like, they're just voting for him because he's a Republican,
right, exactly.
And he's pro-life and whatever, right. and he talk, you know, he's not
he
even anti-immigrant
campaign vote. Even yeah like Beto is going to all the counties, and
everyone wants to see Ted Cruz owned. It doesn't matter. They're still going to vote for him. They just want to see him just sit down a little bit.
Piece of shit. He wrote an op-ed for Time magazine about why Donald Trump should be man of the year.
My God.
This is a man that Trump said his wife said jokes about his wife, said his dad was part of killing JFK. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the
this is now recently.
Just a while like ago. A month ago.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Oh, the op-ed? Oh, yeah.
The op-ed, yeah. I mean, it's that
Cruz
kind
must
of
have met with someone from Russia as well.
Of course,
it definitely happened.
Yeah. And then we see, you know, the stuffed suit and the lobbying fucking envelope that is Mario.
Marco Rubio.
Yeah, Marco Rubio. Thank you. In this documentary, you know, where they show the Parkland kid standing up to him.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I feel like Michael Moore is kind of weighing, like, this is the bullshit we have been living through with all this, with the election, what the fuck did we do? And then the letting this autocrat in Michigan become governor and poisoning our kids with, like, here's the future, like, please. Like,
the thing about Michael Moore that's always so good is that even though it was pieced together and, it, you know, and kind of, again, disjointed, it's very clear that he doesn't consider all of these things as equal. He doesn't consider Democrats dropping the ball to be equal to a nearly fascist or what could very easily become a like Third Reich, you know? And that is important. It's like, within all the bullshit, we agree on the very, very fundamentals of this country. I thought one of the most moving parts, the thing that he said was that, I think he said based something like the American dream, we've never had the American dream and we've never had freedom and that we're still constantly working towards that. And I've never been more patriotic than in the Trump era. Like, yeah, I am so, and so I, for me, I'm like, yeah, this country's a project. We got to keep working at it. For the first time, I believe in it.
Amen. That is truth, man. That is true. And that's, thank God for autocrats, because then you really can, you know, really brings out the patriotism.
Gotta love them.
And then and liberals, and I know you have, like, I grew up in Michigan where there's lots of libertarians. Like, the entire state is basically libertarians.
Really?
Oh, yeah. There's a strong, in the middle of the state is where there's, it's all, it's basically people out on their farms who are like, I don't want to talk to the postman. Don't come here.
I guess
here.
After you hit that many deer and see right. them, like, watch them just quiver to their death.
Yes. Then, yeah. You know, a lot
you
of
just the, become a libertarian. I don't know. That's, Michigan just sounds like roadkill. Like, I've been there, and I'm like, it is in the middle of it, I'm just like, how? There's bunnies everywhere.
There's a lot of bunnies. There's a lot of deer on the road. But it's, I think it started with pot. Like, libertarians smoke pot. And because they're like, I don't want the government to tell me not to smoke my fucking weed.
Totally.
And that's where it, you know, kind of came from, which is like this anti-government, like, don't fucking force your shit on me and leave me alone. And I want to smoke some weed. And, you know, that's what we have. So I briefly, quick anecdote. I was telling George this earlier. I went back to Michigan to work on a campaign for a Republican congressman, a guy who was running for state congressman because he was pro-choice, anti-war, pro-environment. And he was running in Pete Hoekstra's old seat, and Pete Hoekstra's the devil. And so we didn't want another devil to be, so we a bunch of us from San Francisco went to work in Michigan to help get this Republican elected, because he was basically a Democrat. He was a rhino. And one of the things that, I went to a Lincoln Day dinner, which they have there, you know, those things. And one of the things you did,
you
was
wear a little
was,
fake beard.
There was a raffle. I wore a fake beard, and I talked very slowly, like Lincoln. Apparently, but you would shoot effigies. So in the back, they had Nancy Pelosi, they had Harry Reid, and they had President Obama, and you shot them, and then the person who shot them the best got a musket loader gun in this
great.
Raffle.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. It's interesting. There's an antidote for you.
Thanks, Michigan.
So liberalism.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yay.
Cute.
Yeah. So,
he's basically a Democrat. Kill them.
Kill them all. But okay. So, and what are we looking at the themes here for this documentary? What are the themes? What's a theme?
Power.
Despair.
Despair. Well, do you guys just name a lot of? Is this for your word cluster, Cloud?
Yeah, exactly. It's for tagging. Cluster. Yeah, this is like for.
This is for our tags.
Yeah, I think despair is predominant to me in this.
I wrote desperation and despair. Those are the two words I wrote down for this.
But simultaneously, was about empowerment.
Yes.
And action.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's. It'd be interesting what people say once they see this. Like, tweet at us. Let us know what you think when you see this documentary. Mm-hmm.
It may leave theaters soon. It's possible. It's not doing as well as they were hoping.
I know. There were only like 5 of us in the 10:30.
Wow.
Right. Yeah.
In San Francisco, no less. Yeah. Or in.
Yeah, but in the mall.
But you're at that weird mall.
In the weird mall.
That place is weird. It's
super
hard.
Weird.
It's hard to get up to. It's so odd. And the Van Ness one is weird too, because you take like 8 escalators. Way up into
the Van Ness one is haunted.
It is a weird place. Let me ask you some questions. What's your hometown?
Palo Alto, California.
Shallow
Alto.
Yeah,
Shallow
you and James
Alto.
Franco.
Person you're most mistaken for.
Person I'm most mistaken for, I mean, just like a different race, just like the race people want me to be, you know, like.
Which is what? What are you?
Oh, Filipina. Oh, Italian. Or, oh, what? Hawaiian. Oh, anything.
Right. Gotcha.
Brazilian. What and then I speak Spanish, so it's fun.
And you're not Italian?
Si, okay. I'm Italian.
What is your dark secret?
My dark secret? Mm-hmm. My dark secret is that I had a 4-year crush from age 16 to 20 on Kevin Spacey.
That is awesome.
And it's bad. Like plastered wallpaper,
no
posters everywhere, keychains.
No.
Keychains?
Just like, yeah, like I joined a Kevin Spacey fan club.
Shut
you guys,
up.
Tweet it. We can talk all about this. My Hotmail account was kevinsangel@hotmail.com.
No,
you
no.
don't even want, like, it is deep
you
and bad
it
and like, yeah. So paying it forward. And I take no responsibility for what he's done. And I know he is a predator.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Though.
But listen, I have a type, so.
Sure. what? Well, here we go. Then what is your turnoff?
Turnoff? Oh,
modern Kevin
what
Spacey?
What do you mean, like romantically?
I think romantic, or just in life, maybe even something that you don't like.
Pet peeve, perhaps. You would say? A pet peeve,
there you go.
Oh, see, that's better. I can't think of turnoffs. I'm like, what is...
That's a little loaded, yeah.
I haven't thought about... Yeah, it's super loaded. But like I haven't dated enough to be like, what's a turnoff? Pet peeve is definitely putting on the toilet paper the wrong way. Like what the fuck?
It's supposed to go
over.
Out. The flappy is out. Yeah.
The flappy's out. It's not under.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Also peeing on the seat. Women need to stop fucking peeing on the seat.
Why women pee on the seat?
Women need. I decided, but when I turned 30, which has been a while now, you put the goddamn paper on there and sit down on it. And what's her face from Marvelous Mrs. Maisel? I can't believe I'm not remembering her name.
She's
the
awesome.
Comic. She's so great.
Yeah, she is.
And she took her Emmy speech time to say, ladies, stop peeing on the seat.
There you go.
Which is like, that's how much of a plague it is. You guys don't even know. You go to most women's restrooms, they fucking pee all over the seat.
I just heard my friend who went to Comedy Day with me said the same thing. She's like, the women's seats are always
like, your thighs aren't that on point.
I think we got a Michael Moore documentary topic right there.
Absolutely.
Yes, we do. Yeah. Yeah.
Surprised he didn't squeeze that one in as well.
Right. Roger and P. what is your guilty pleasure?
I don't have enough fun.
Oh.
That's something.
What is my guilty pleasure? Just like, you know, dancing when no one's watching, that kind of shit.
That's a good one. What do you never travel without?
Oh my God. Eye drops. One time I had an ex-boyfriend lick my eyeball because my eyes were so dry. I was like, please do it. Babe, just do it.
Well,
he was like, okay.
Like
and he
segment.
Licked my eyeball and it
this
was
is a fun segment.
Great.
That's the turn on part, which I skipped. I skipped right over turn on. So do you have any pets?
I have a cat.
Yeah.
She's wonderful.
What's your cat's name?
Ramona.
George is a big cat guy.
I am a huge... Yeah, what? Do you have a
cat?
Yeah,
Sherby. He's wandering around here somewhere.
Sherby! Yeah. Tuxedo cats. I'm never going to not get a tuxedo cat now that I have one. They're amazing. They're so gregarious. So sweet. So super head buddy, you know? Like, really just like...
Oh, pff, pff, yeah, yeah. They
love.
Oh. What's your biggest regret?
Good God.
Your NYU major.
Should be. It really should be. I don't know. I don't live like that, dude.
That's sure.
That's not your thing.
Being on soft on.
Well, okay, here we go. Here we go. Okay. Yeah. Not getting into heavier drugs.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I've never done acid. I've never done cocaine, maybe once. I've never, I've done shrooms, but like not having like a rave phase because
right.
I can't do it now.
Right.
Like I'm just too old. Yeah. I don't have time for that shit.
No.
20s
were your time.
Yeah. Just not going.
Especially NYU. You didn't have any of that at NYU?
I I became an activist.
Oh, right.
So fucking high and mighty.
A lot of yogurt. Not a lot of acid, but a lot of yogurt.
Yes.
A lot of quinoa. Yeah.
A lot of quinoa.
I was next. My next question is literally, who is your celebrity crush? We know that now.
We don't have to.
And where do you see yourself in 10 years?
I see myself making a film like Fahrenheit 9/11, 11/9.
Yeah?
Yeah, why not?
That'd be awesome.
I don't know. I want to reach to the, you know, I want to reach to the little, like, up to the baggy chinos of someone like Michael Moore,
the JNCOs of Michael Moore?
The JNCOs. The Kirkland brand. If I could reach to the Kirkland, up to the waist of the Kirkland brand of Michael Moore's pants, which sounds sexual, and that's not how I intended, but, you know, these are the greats, and I would hope to, you know, make media that matters as much as the stuff they do.
Amen. So you podcast.
Yeah, I'm gonna The Bituation Room. Follow it on iTunes and Twitter. I think it's The Bituation. No, The B Room Podcast is what my Twitter is at The B Room Podcast.
The B Room Podcast.
Yeah.
And do you have an episode out already, or will it be out?
It'll be out. It'll be out soon.
Okay.
I'm aiming October, early October, first of October.
Look for it in October.
The Bituation Room.
Francesca, this has been awesome.
Yeah.
You're awesome. Congrats on all your success.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for doing this, our little podcast.
Of course. This has been great. Have me back. I love docs.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
I love you guys.
We'd love to have you back.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, George.
Thank you, Paco. Okay. Thank you, Francesca. Thanks for listening. You can find out more about SupDoc at supdocpodcast.com. And follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
And please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes.
Our theme song was written by David Siegel, and our show was engineered by Will Scoville.
If you want us to cover a doc, have suggestions for guests, or you just want to reach out, please email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.